Welcome to Compassionate Conversations, where we push the boundaries of comfort to empower you to become all that you dream of being.
Hi, I'm Esther Kane. I'm a Canadian psychotherapist and the author of It's Not About the Food, A Woman's Guide to Making Peace with Food and Our Bodies. For over 25 years, I've been helping people to overcome problematic relationships to food and their body image. And to my great delight, my book has helped thousands of people to do just that. I decided to do this series where I interview other body image warriors who I respect and love their work in order to help us form more of a community around talking about our disordered relationship with food and our bodies, in the hopes that we will find strength in each other's stories and share some really helpful tools and methods that you can use in order to heal your relationship with food and how you see your body. If you're thinking, I don't know if I have an eating disorder, so maybe these videos won't be meaningful to me, please give it a chance. When I tell people, for example, that I'm an eating disorder therapist, people automatically think eating disorders are just anorexia and bulimia. And while I treat those issues in my practice, the bulk of my clients tend to fall into the category of emotional eating. People who eat when they're mad, sad, glad, and fearful. There's all kinds of reasons that we turn to food. And they are usually the people that are yo-yo dieters, that do obsessive exercising. Maybe they are in middle age and their body's metabolism has changed and they've put on some extra weight and they just can't seem to get it off. All of these people fall into the category of some type of disordered eating pattern. So if that applies to you, please stay tuned. I'm going to be interviewing some fabulous people in this series who will definitely give you some great ideas and tips in order to make peace with food and your body. I'm so excited about today's episode where I will be interviewing Summer Inanen. Summer is a professionally trained coach specializing in body image, self-worth, and confidence. She helps people all over the world to stop living behind the numbers on their scales through her private and group coaching. She is the best-selling author of Body Image Remix, host of the podcast Eat the Rules, which I've been listening to, it's fantastic, and creator of You on Fire, an online group coaching program dedicated to helping people get free from body shame. Welcome, Summer.
Thank you so much for having me, Esther.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. So firstly, I want to know, and I'm sure people listening and watching this want to know your own personal story, because I think it's such an interesting niche to be a body image coach. So what's your story that led you to the work you do? And why did you choose to be a body image coach?
Yeah, so my story is probably similar to a lot of others in that, you know, growing up, I don't really remember a time where I felt confident in my body. I remember from a very young age, like kind of, you know, being self-critical, worrying that my body was too big. And there's a lot of different things that drove me to feel that way. Obviously, like, you know, our culture and the media and things like that. But also, you know, my mom was a chronic dieter. She used to bring me to like Weight Watchers meetings. Like,
I hear those stories a lot. Yeah.
You know, so I was just in that environment. And then I was bullied like a lot for my body, mostly from my brother, but also from kids at school and stuff. So, you know, from a very young age, I sort of felt like there's something wrong with me. And, you know, if I can change the way I look, then I won't feel this way anymore. And so I ended up kind of, I think probably in my young teenage years, like probably when I was around 12 or 13, like I remember kind of sitting in my room and like trying to do exercises. Like that was sort of my first attempt at trying to, you know, change the size of my body. And then when I went into high school, I remember we did this project. This is like the worst thing ever. Like if you're a parent listening to this and you ever see this teacher trying to do this with your child, like please stop them. But there was this project we had to do for science class where we had to like track our macronutrients and our calories.
Oh, no, seriously? Yeah.
I know.
That's a new one for me. And I thought I heard it all.
I know. Really? And so, that was like kind of my first like entry into like, oh, you know, these are these things and like we can manipulate them. And this was in the early 90s. And so that was when low fat was kind of the primary dieting approach. And so I remember like asking my mom, I was like, mom, like, how can I, you know, cut out fat? Like what can I do? And she had like this book. And she was like, well, you can look at like all the different fat grams in this book and you want to try to keep it under like a certain amount a day. And so that's when I started to like, you know, I remember I stopped eating peanut butter. Like I started to, you know, sort of make these changes. And it wasn't anything severe. Like it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like, I wasn't like extremely strict, but it was just like this level of consciousness that had sort of come to the surface. And then, you know, when
can you just describe for people, were you like tall, big bone, like, I mean, what was your body like?
You know, I like, it's so hard to like, I was more like medium size, like mid size, like not that different than I am now, I guess. Like right. I've always had bigger hips. I've always had bigger thighs. Like I've, you know, I hit puberty well before everybody else. So So I definitely, you know, like looking back, if I were to see a picture of me, I'd be like I had a really warped perception of how I looked. But you know, a lot of my friends were thinner than me. Like the media messages like showed people who are a lot thinner than me. So even though I wasn't, I didn't experience, you know, like weight stigma, and I definitely had, you know, thin privilege. Like I still had this very distorted view of my body. And so then, you know, that I sort of dabbled with a bit of dieting then. And then in my 20s, that's when I really took it to the next level. And that's when I started to really use like exercise as a primary sort of way to control my body, or coping mechanism, which I know now how to describe it. And so I became very kind of obsessively into exercising, and as well started to like do more food manipulation and dieting. And I just sort of ended up on this cycle where I'd be able to kind of stick with something for a little while, and then like all hell would break loose and I would just eat everything in the fridge and then feel terrible about myself. And so I was on that like restrict binge cycle for many years. And you know, anytime I sort of got down to my thinnest, like I would feel good for like 5 minutes, and then it was just never enough, you know, like it was just, it was never enough. Around my late 20s, early 30s, like I got really into like paleo and CrossFit, and that I became so obsessed with that. And I thought everything I was doing was for my health. Like that's really what I convinced people of. That's what I convinced myself of, when really deep down it was still to manipulate my body. And I ended up actually going back to school to become a nutritionist at that time, because oh, I'm so obsessed with food. Like I want to make a career out of this obsession. Which I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do.
I see that a lot. Yes.
Yeah. So I did do that. And when I started to practice nutrition, that, you know, I was kind of passing along the same ideologies that I had unfortunately believed. And then everything sort of came to a head for me when I didn't have my period for a while. And it didn't matter what I did. Like I couldn't lose weight. Like I could not lose weight anymore. Like I was just gaining weight. So I was like, something's really wrong with me. Like, I don't know what's going on. And so I would then try to diet like even more, like more hardcore dieting to try to fix it, which then made the problem even worse. And so finally I saw multiple doctors and none of them were very helpful. And finally I found a naturopathic doctor who actually looked at what I was eating and looked at how I was exercising and was like, you are not eating enough. You are exercising too much. Like your hormone levels are the same as a postmenopausal woman as a result of this. So
you're chronic cardio.
Well, or CrossFit. Too much of
it. So many women aren't eating enough calories. It's such a,
I was very undernourished. And so that was like my wake up call moment for me. And I remember sitting in my car and crying, and I was more upset that she had told me that I had to stop doing CrossFit and stop working out so much. than I was about the fact that my hormones were a postmenopausal woman. And that's when I sort of was like, I think I might have a problem. Like I, that's when I sort of came, like the light bulb sort of started to turn on.
How old were you again?
I think I was 32. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, so I remember reaching out to a friend who had kind of been through something similar. And she told me like, I totally relate. And I've been through something similar. And it sort of set me on this path of really realizing that like, okay, the root of all of this is just how I feel about my body. And I remember reading this book called When Women Stop Hating Their Bodies. And it just like completely blew my mind open. Like I was like, oh my gosh, like this, everything is starting to kind of piece together here. Yeah. And then I discovered intuitive eating. And then and I realized like, oh, okay. Like this, everything made sense. And I was like, oh, this is why I've struggled with food. Like, and it's really because of the way I felt about my body, and the way I feel about my body is really because that's how I valued myself. And so, and so what that kind of set me on was a path towards healing and being able to really start to work on how I felt about myself as a whole. And as I was going through that process, I started to change how I was working with clients as a nutritionist. I started to, you know, stop weighing them and really try to focus more on like how things make them feel versus how their body is changing. But it was a really gradual process because I was wrestling with all of this stuff. I was trying to unlearn all of this stuff myself.
And it's unlearning, isn't it? There's so much, because, you know, that's why I never talk about food with my clients, because they know everything there is to know about how many calories something has and what they should eat, what they, you know,
Exactly. And then, you know, ultimately I decided to go and do a couple of different coaching programs to really get my focus to be more on like just helping individuals really find their worth, which ties into body image. That's really the root of it. And so, and that's when I shifted gears probably about, you know, 8 years ago now to really focus on helping people with body image, because that's what I knew that that was really the thing that was like causing people to be in that cycle. And I thought, okay, if we can help people, to just feel more accepting of their bodies, to really, you know, unhook their value from how they look, then these issues with food wouldn't be here, you know, getting off that cycle becomes so much easier. And so, so that's what led me to be able to do that, to be able to do this work. And I'm grateful that I still get to do it.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I'll put everything in the show notes, like how people can find your wonderful podcast, your programs, your book, everything.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, such an interesting story. And, gosh, I hear so many of these stories every day, and it just pains me. I think, you know, sometimes I just wish, my one wish for all of my clients that struggle like that is I just wish they could see how beautiful, fabulous, and perfect they are as they are. And I know the word perfect is problematic, but I mean, in the eyes of the universe, I mean it in a very sort of spiritual way. It's not just about how we look.
Absolutely. I think that all the time. Yeah. When I see someone, I'm just like, I just want to shake them and be like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm just sitting here looking at you and you're just so radiant and beautiful. And, you know, to think that you felt like that, you know, it's just awful.
It's just, I think that it's kind of like almost like a universal condition for a lot of people in our culture, unfortunately. Yes,
unfortunately. So yeah, that brings me to my next question. Why do you think so many of us dislike the image we see when we look in the mirror or see ourselves in photos?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's easy to blame ourselves and blame our bodies and think, well, the reason why I don't like it is because of my body, but it's not about our body. It's what we've learned about our bodies. It's about the cultural messages that we've inherited about our bodies and about our worthiness. And I think, you know, we've been conditioned to sort of see like this archetype of like the ideal woman, and the ideal woman is, you know, thin, white, young, you know, no sort of blemishes or cellulite or anything like that. Is also like a health enthusiast and is able to manage and juggle a career and a family and all do all this stuff and look really effortless. And I think a lot of us are sort of measuring ourselves up against that all the time. We're sort of looking at ourselves in the mirror and thinking, like, how do I measure up against this ideal? And we are then, you know, not feeling good about ourselves because all of these things are kind of suggesting that we're not good enough. And 95% of us don't look like that ideal, you know, like only 5% of us have that body type. Right. And so it's like, we're trying to, you know, force ourselves to be something that we're not when body diversity is real. And I think that's because of so many of the images that we're constantly immersing ourselves with. And, you know, it goes deeper than that, in that it's really rooted in, you know, these social oppressions. So things like racism or sexism, classism, ableism, ageism, and fatphobia or size discrimination, like those all have an influence on how we view ourselves, because depending on the identities that we hold, we're going to have different layers of oppression and different beliefs about ourselves. So if you take something, for example, like size discrimination, which has one of the bigger influences on our body image, that instills this belief in us that, you know, fat is bad and thin is good. And so what we do is then when we look at ourselves, we're looking at it through that belief system. And so we're sort of saying, like, okay, you know, if I perceive my body as bigger, then that's bad. I'm bad. And therefore, you know, like, I'm going to feel bad about myself as a whole. Mm-hmm. And our sort of like patriarchal system or sexist system has really made us believe that our values in our body. And so therefore, if we're perceiving our body as bad, we're perceiving our whole selves as bad, and that there's something wrong with us. And so that's really what creates like the kind of perception that we have, when the reality is that like we're all good enough as we are. We've just learned these really harmful beliefs, but we can start to unlearn those. We can change those things. And I think another thing sometimes with the mirror and photos is that if we kind of are the type of person to sort of like not look at photos or avoid the mirror, then when we do look at those things, there's often a bit of a disconnect because maybe doesn't match up to like our own sort of the way we just feel. Right. And it can create almost this like jarring reaction where we see ourselves and we're like, oh my gosh, that's what I look like. Yeah. And so this is a bit of a more of a sidebar, but like, I always encourage people to do work with a mirror, or do work with photos, which I know you've had Vivian McMaster on, and that's kind of the center of her work. Because it is so helpful. Like the more that we can like familiarize ourselves with the way that we look, the easier it becomes to see ourselves in the mirror.
Can I just add something there?
Yeah.
Something that's just fascinating to me. I was so nervous about doing videos and seeing myself all the time, and the opposite of what I feared has happened. When I watch myself on video interviewing people, I feel I have more self-love for how I look, and I appreciate myself. I just can't understand that, but it's really working. So I think maybe it's a bit of exposure therapy.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Yeah. I think the more that you, and obviously I think like, you know, you have to have kind of like the support systems in place to be able to navigate through the thoughts and feelings that come up, but the more that you do it, the easier it definitely becomes. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that like, you know, understanding that it's not like your body's not the problem. It's not, you know, it's not you. It's just, it's what you've learned. It's what you've learned in terms of how you perceive yourself.
Yes. We're not naturally born hating our bodies. I mean, look at babies when they're, they walk around, especially, I love, you know, little 2-year-olds, my nieces too. And she walked around with the belly sticking out. It's the belly first. It's just fantastic.
I know.
Where do we, you know, and then we learn to despise our bellies. It seems like the number one part of the body that women learn to dislike.
Yeah.
The most.
Yeah. Yep.
And it gives life, you know. Along those lines, Summer, what are some concrete steps that, you know, listeners, watchers of this can take to move towards feeling more comfortable in their own skin? So you mentioned being in photos, doing mirror work. What are some other tips that you have? I'm sure you have some good stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think one of the most important things that I love to give people up front is doing a bit of an environmental detox. Because if we think about like what we're exposed to every day, let's say, for example, you wake up in the morning you check your phone and you maybe see like a friend's posted a before and after picture, or you see an advertisement for a diet, and then you go into your bathroom and you step on the scale and you don't like the number. And then you go to get dressed in your closet and you see clothes that don't fit you anymore. And you wish that you could fit into them. So then you go to work and you see advertisements on the bus stop, like are showing kind of like the ideal. And then you go out for lunch with your coworkers, and like one of them's talking about how they're doing intermittent fasting. And then, and then you come home and you watch The Bachelor and you're seeing like all these other women who fit the ideal. And so, you know, you have to kind of think about like, what are you putting into your brain every day?
And being sledgehammered by these messages.
Right. And so, but we can control some of these things, which is why I always like suggest this as like a very easy first step, is doing a bit of an environmental detox and trying to remove anything that suggests that thinner is better and anything that suggests that there's something wrong with your body. So, you know,
you have to hide out in a cave with those monks.
Yes. I mean, you can't avoid it completely, but I think that we can control some of it. So for example, like, you know, getting rid of your scale like that, or whatever you sort of use to measure your body size, because you're essentially relying on this external piece of metal to tell you how you should feel about yourself.
Yeah.
And so freeing yourself of that helps you to become more in tune with like how you actually feel.
Yes. By the way, I just have to stop you for a second. Yeah. Summer had a fabulous photo that will be in the blog post that I'm doing where she's smashing the scale with a sledgehammer. I just shouted hurrah when I saw that.
Yeah, that's a fun thing to do. I love to do that.
So cool.
I suggest it to everybody. Smashing.
Yeah, and if you've heard about, there used to be scale smashing events in Vancouver that I knew about.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So environmental detox, oh my God. And with social media and everything, like, I just feel like we're so hyper exposed now. It's just insane. Yeah.
But we can control that. I think that's the good news. So you can curate your feed. So to get rid of the stuff that, just be really conscious of it. Like, how does this make me feel? Is this making me believe that thinner is better? And get rid of it. And same with, you know, the clothes that don't fit you in your closet, pack them away so that they're not there again, like changing the way that you feel about yourself. And, and I think that can go such a long way. Like, I do a lot of deep work with people, and sometimes at the end of our time together, I'll be like, what was the most impactful? And they'll be like, changing my social media feed. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause it makes such a huge difference. And they've, you know, studies have shown that the images that you see change how you feel about yourself. And so once you've kind of removed stuff, then you can add things in that are going to support this belief that, you know, all bodies are worthy of respect. And so, you know, having your social media feed be full of bodies that are, you know, that are larger, that are diverse, that don't look like you, that are sharing messages around, you know, self-acceptance, or, you know, just dismantling beliefs that are fat phobic. So for example, showing that, you know, you can be healthy at many different sizes, you can be fit at many different sizes, or confident, or any of these other things. That goes such a long way. Like, I will encourage anyone to just, you know, follow some, for example, like plus size models or some other influencers and things that, cause that will change how you look at bodies and how you perceive yourself.
And then human beings are so visual.
Yes, exactly. And so that's big kind of first step. Another thing is to really be actively unlearning and challenging the beliefs that we've inherited. So again, challenging this belief that like fat is bad or unhealthy. And there's a lot of ways that we can do that. There's a lot of really good books out there that go into the science around weight and health. There's a lot of
podcasts. That's health at any size, in case people.
Or like, I really like, Christy Harrison's book, Anti-Diet. There's so many, like Sonia Renee Taylor's book. The Body Is Not an Apology is amazing, fantastic. So I recommend those. And
there's so much science behind this now. Like, we know scientifically, you don't have to be thin to be healthy. In fact, sometimes being thin is not the way to go.
Right. Yeah, exactly. As I showed from my experience, right? I was not healthy when I was at my thinnest.
Yes, so many women, I hear that. Yes.
But I think it's like, it's an active thing because we're swimming in this culture. We're in these waters where we're constantly being fed these messages. The only way that we can really unlearn them is by actively like trying to fill our brain with other stuff. And so adding these things in.
Take away and replace.
Yeah, exactly.
Take away the toxic stuff and replace it with nourishing, self-affirming.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Those are kind of the sort of like upfront, more basic things. And then obviously like, you know, I don't have to go into all these in detail, but like self-compassion is really big in terms of just learning how to, you know, affirm our value, learning how to kind of ease the fears that we have inside of us and like, you know, assert our own safety and like just be able to kind of tend to the parts of ourselves that are feeling fearful of maybe like loosening up these rules or you know, just letting our body do what it's going to do. And so, that's a huge piece of the work I do with people. And really just trying to, you know, find your value outside of how you look in terms of, you know, what gives you a sense of purpose? What are your values? You know, what makes your life fulfilling so that you can align yourself to those things instead of, letting your appearance kind of be the thing that's dictating your life.
There was something, I did some training with Sandra Friedman many years ago. I don't think she's doing this work anymore, but she wrote When Girls Feel Fat. And she did all this stuff for young women, sort of tweenies. And it was so, so good. And one exercise she had girls do was talk about their best friends, their best girlfriend, and what they loved about them. And she said at the end, were any of those things that she's incredibly thin? And, you know, she said, we don't have these conversations where we sit around and say, I love that Martha because she's just so fascinatingly thin. Look, it's.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I will often say to people, like, what are people going to say about you at your funeral? Because you never go to a funeral and hear them say, well, she was thin. Yeah. Like that's.
Yeah.
And so I think it's starting to kind of think about yourself in that way as like a whole human being and not just this like compartmentalizing yourself into body parts. But it's like, I don't want to make this sound easy because it really is like,
no,
you know, it takes a long time to do
multi-layered
going, and it's a practice. It's not a destination. It's something that you need to be kind of showing up for every day for yourself.
Yeah. So you had one wonderful podcast episode that just blew my mind. I loved it. I learned so much. You talked about the difference between body positivity and body neutrality. And it blew my mind because I've had a hard time navigating around this body positivity movement. I just find so many of my clients just can't go there. It's not realistic for them. It's not doable. Mm-hmm. And then when you talked about body neutrality, it just seemed much more useful. And I've been using that with my clients. And yeah, it's a game changer. So which term do you prefer and why? So maybe define those terms for us. And
Yeah. So let's, you know, body positivity, first off, like body positivity was actually started as like a social justice movement. It's meant to be a social justice movement that aims to really disrupt, you know, things like anti-fat bias and race and racism and things like that in order to have more equitable treatment to all bodies. So, you know, equitable access to healthcare and, you know, in to end discrimination and body-based discrimination that shows up in all the different kind of areas of our lives. And so that's how it started as like a grassroots thing, like many, many years ago. And then unfortunately it sort of got co-opted by the mainstream to sort of be this movement about like, you know, loving your body and like embrace your cellulite. And you sort of think about like the Dove ads.
I was just going to say the Dove ads.
Yeah. And things like that. And so I always like to explain that difference because I think it's like, you know, body positivity as a social justice movement is actually a really great thing, but body positivity is kind of like a individual love your body thing. I mean, I don't want to say it's bad. It's definitely better than the kind of mainstream messages, but I think that it doesn't really move us forward as much as we need to. Because I think it falls short in some ways. Like I think the expectation to sort of love your body makes a lot of people feel even worse about themselves, because they're like, I know I should love my body and I don't. Yeah. And then they sort of beat themselves up for beating themselves up. Right. And that's never.
And how realistic is it? I mean, it's such a fluid thing how we feel about our body and how we feel about ourselves, and every moment changes, right?
Yeah, like positivity. I mean, you've heard toxic positivity. Like, we're not meant to feel positive all the time. And
yeah.
And I think that it keeps the focus on our body too. Like, people sort of interpret it as like, well, I need to love my cellulite, or I need to like appreciate my stomach. And it's like, no, you don't. Like, you can not like those things and still feel good about yourself as a whole.
Well, that's like, I just want to say, Summer, it's like when people come to therapy and they basically say that they want to be happy. And I say, well, I think that might be the problem right there. Like, your expectation that you're always going to be happy or always feel good is BS. I mean, that's just not realistic. Like, included in the 10,000 joys, the 10,000 sorrows, if on a good day you got them both kind of balanced. I mean,
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so I think that, you know, it's something I would always ask someone is like, you know, what do you think of body positivity? Because maybe they have a different definition of it than I do. But I tend to find that like most people interpret it as, you know, kind of the way that it's been portrayed as like, you know, we need to love our bodies. And I think that the word love can be, you know, sort of interpreted different ways too. Like you can, you know, you can love, you like action, love can be kind of like an action. Like, I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to, you know, prioritize my needs. Like, I'm going to respect myself, like all those things. But that's great. But love can also sort of be, I think, interpreted sometimes as almost like an emotion or a feeling, like I love you, like that, like euphoric sort of sense. And like, that's where I think it gets a little tricky if that's how we're interpreting it. So again, it's always like, I always like to ask people, because everyone has their own definition of things.
Exactly.
But that's kind of the issue, is just like this idea of keeping the focus on our body, keeping this focus on like, we have to be positive about it. And I just don't think that's true. Whereas like body neutrality is really about getting to a place where you don't really think about your body so much anymore. Like, maybe you like what you see, maybe you don't. It probably varies day to day, but you're able to just kind of go on with your day, live your life and feel good about yourself as a whole. Your value is not in how you look. It's about knowing you're good enough regardless of how you look. And I always use this example of like parallel parking. And I'm actually very good at parallel parking, but let's just say
that's the only thing I'm good at when it comes to driving.
I know, I'm really good at it too. but let's just say you weren't good at parallel parking. You wouldn't like hate yourself for that. You would just be like, well, I'm just not good at parallel parking. And I think it's the same thing. Like, we can not like our appearance and still be just okay with ourselves. I think the problem is that we've been told that the way that we look is that's where our value is. And so,
And then we have to love ourselves too. That's another message I think we get, which is BS. I mean, you can love yourself all the time. I mean,
Like, you don't, you know, I don't want people thinking that they have to look in the mirror and think that they look hot all the time or like attractive. Yeah. Like, I think it's like, I just want you to kind of have a neutral emotional reaction. Like, that's really what it comes down to, that it's just, it's more about like body neutrality is really about having a more emotionally neutral reaction to the way that you look.
And Summer, what are the concrete benefits that people can get out of practicing this body neutrality? From what you're saying, it sounds like instead of going up and down and all over the place, you're sort of more even.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just like, if you think about all the time and all the energy that you spend thinking negatively about your body, if you didn't have that, you would have a lot more time and energy back. Like, what I hear from people all the time is that it's more of a sense of peace. It's more of a sense of like freedom or calm. It's like just more mental space. And you're still going to feel, you know, bad emotions. You're still, or I hate labeling things as bad, but you're still going to feel things like, you know, grief or inferiority or, you know, disgust sometimes, like, because we're human. But to have that sort of be in the absence of like how we look, then we're able to just be more emotionally in tune with ourselves. And we're not letting our body kind of dictate like how we show up in this world. Cause I think so many people are, you know, changing what they wear, holding themselves back, not showing up in pictures, not looking at themselves in pictures, not doing the activities that they want to do, because of how they feel about their body. And so when we feel neutral, we're able to live our life, go do those things, feel more confident in just who we are. Yeah. And those are the real, you know, concrete benefits, is just being able to like reclaim your life, essentially.
An example that comes to mind is, you know, women in bathing suits, or people in bathing suits in general, you know, the point of being in a bathing suit is to enjoy being outside, feeling the sun on your skin, going in the water, swimming, playing with kids, doing all these wonderful activities. It's not about how you look in your little bikini or, you know, but we made that such a focus.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I, you know, hearing you say that, it like pops in my head. I'm like, I don't remember ever seeing my mom in a bathing suit. Like, it's so rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so I think, yeah, it holds us back from living our life. And I think it sounds like really kind of superficial things, but it's a lot. And what I find with people is that when they do this work, it actually leads to bigger changes in their life overall. Like, I've worked with people who went on to become like a foster parent because they just had more mental space and more confidence. Like, wow. Worked with someone who went and did actually started advocating for health at every size in their medical clinic and like did a presentation for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, there's just all these things that like can come out of it once we have that mental space back, that we're able to just live more purposeful lives. And so it's like, yeah, the kind of, you know, the like, I'm trying to think of a metaphor, but like it's great that you can wear a bikini to the beach. And then like, there's this whole other benefit of just being able to like do more with your life that
I think.
Yeah. And even if that just means being more present with your friends or your kid or whatever.
Well, because you're also not obsessing about what you look like or what you're eating or not eating.
Yeah. You've got
headspace. Yeah.
It takes so much mental energy to do that. And so, yeah, it's really great to like, it goes such a long way. Yeah.
And I just wanted to add one more piggyback onto one point you made that I think was really good about your client who was in the healthcare field, who then educated other healthcare professionals. I see so much in my work that there's so much discrimination against larger sized bodied patients in the healthcare field. And I advocate that my clients educate their doctors and professionals, which is a real shame that we have to do that in this day and age. But there's so much good research out there, you know, and I always tell people, remember that you are a consumer of healthcare, even though it's free in Canada, you're still a consumer, and that you want to get your needs met and you have a right to be looked after and have tests done and, you know, have proper healthcare. So I'm a nightmare for my own doctors because I always bring, you know, if they say anything about my weight or size, you know, I bring them tons of studies and things. But yeah, to advocate for yourself, I think that's quite empowering as well.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. So I think that the segues beautifully into my next question. So I love that you bring a feminist approach to your work, as I do. I think we really have to doing this work. From your perspective, where does the way that we view our bodies and patriarchy intersect, and how can we use feminism to shift this into a more positive direction? You spoke about this, but let's flesh it out.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I kind of mentioned just in terms of a couple of things, like we've been conditioned to sort of think that like our value is in our desirability, right? And that comes from our lack of independence. Like our ability to survive was literally dependent on being, you know, desirable and likable. Like, and so that's kind of in our DNA, and that really stems from like this patriarchal system that we're in. And the other piece of it is really that, like, if you think about it, we've been just talking about this, about the time and energy and money that it takes to constantly be like, you know, investing in fixing yourself or thinking about fixing yourself, and think about what that's taking us away from, right? And so, like, and Naomi Wolf has that quote where she talks about how it's like dieting is like the most potent political sedative, because we're so busy, you know, spending our time sort of thinking about these things, and we're undernourished and all this other stuff. Like, we don't
have
time.
Our brains aren't functioning properly.
Yeah.
Like, you're undernourished, right?
Right. And we don't have the capacity to put our energy towards stuff that's actually going to change our culture.
Right, so, political will, we can't act on it because our brains are foggy. We're not,
And it's really, I know she also has that quote where she talks about like, it's about female obedience. And I think that that is like so true. You know, it's just about keeping us kind of like small and fixated on all these other things that take our time and devalue us really, like, because we're measured based on how we look, like our value. And that's just like, I mean, to me, that makes me want to fight back. Like that makes me say like, screw this system. Like I would like to opt out of that. And so that's where I think it can be really galvanizing to have this lens, because it can help to add fuel to be able to say like, you know what, like, yeah, this isn't my fault. I'm not defective. There's not something wrong with me. It's because of this like messed up culture that we live in. And it's easier for people to sort of opt out then. It's easier for people to say like, I don't want to be a part of this system that discriminates against people. Like, you know, this.
Can I just stop for a second? Because I just want to speak to something that you just brought up. Sure. Women and anger. So I tell all my clients that anger, we have such a ambivalent relationship with anger as women, and we're so confused about it. But this is where I think our anger, you use the word fuel. It's fuel. We use it as fuel politically to change these horrible systems that are really doing a number on all of us. So this is where anyone who's watching and listening to this, you could take a page out of our books, because I think you and I probably got really angry about this at some point and decided to do something about it with our lives, right? Yeah, we can use our anger as fuel to change the patriarchal system.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I didn't get that. Yeah, no, it's true. No, it's true. And I mean, and you see everything that's happening, you know, in the US with the reversal of Roe versus Wade, and like you see how, like these systems are in place that really try to strip women of, or people really, like, because I don't want to exclude non-binary folks or trans women, but of their autonomy and of their rights, and hold them back life-wise, right? Like not having, you know, proper support for for birthing people, for postpartum, like for, you know, all of these different, like the formula shortage, like you see how this can set people back, right? Like, and culturally, like you have to ask yourself, like, who's benefiting from this and who's gaining from this? And it's like, well, the cis white men typically. So so I think it's like, it's all interconnected. And I think the more that you can learn about that stuff, like the more that you can kind of get that feminist lens, the more helpful it is to be able to unlearn it and be able to reject it. You know, like I've had people say to me, as soon as I learned about how anti-fatness was really rooted in anti-blackness, it's so much easier for me to like really, you know, say like, I'm not going to diet. It's because that's, you know, you're sort of feeding into that kind of like racist system. It's really interesting that, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but I find it like very helpful to have that broad, bigger picture and take that approach. Yeah. I don't think we can do this work without it, because otherwise we just think there's something wrong with us and we think that we're defective and it's all on us to change. And like, that's not true. And it also speaks to why it is so hard to make these changes, because the culture still is the way that it is.
Yeah. I had the unbelievable honor of meeting with Susie Orbach a number of years ago when I was writing my book, who wrote Fat as a Feminist Issue. And I think it was one of the first preeminent, you know, feminist treatises on this topic. And I just wanted to give her a shout out because, she said that we need to inoculate, when I met with her, we need to inoculate young women with a feminist message in order to prevent them from, you know, absorbing these fallacies and these.
Exactly. Messages. That's a good way of putting it.
And bringing up the Roe versus Wade situation, I mean, I just think it's important to honor that we are living in crazy times. I'm sure so many of us are just gobsmacked by that development. we are living in some very scary times in terms of a majority of people trying to make us go backwards. So we really need to stand up and make our voices count more than ever.
Right.
And so the personal is political. I love that saying as well. So not dieting is a political action.
Yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%. Yeah. Like I remember I interviewed Amy Pence Brown and she was like, my body is political because she identifies as fat. She's fat. So she's like, yes. My body is political. And so,
yes.
I think it, the same is true that rejecting dieting is political. Yeah.
Yeah. So in your own journey, what have you learned to love/accept, appreciate about the body you have or feel neutral about? What are some of your future aspirations in this regard? Because I know it's such a journey and I always liken it to peeling back an onion. There's just layers, right? And you said you're 43 now and I'm 51 and mine is so much about the aging process at this point, hormonal shift. You know, where have you come? Where are you at? Where do you want to go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that like I appreciate that I can just sort of exist and survive. Like my body's been through a lot, especially recently. And so I don't really think about my appearance that much. Like it just doesn't really occupy that much time. I think what I appreciate most, it's not necessarily like an active appreciation for my body, although I do appreciate everything it can do for me. I really do. But especially because I have like, you know, some health issues that prevent me from doing some things sometimes. And so like, I always really appreciate on the days that I feel really good. But I think more of it is that like, I just appreciate my life in the absence of body hate. Like I just, mm-hmm. I'm so much more present, so much more present. Yeah.
Because you talked about that what I talk about this sort of a circle, you know, I get women to say how much, what percentage of the pie is taken up thinking about your body and food and weight and all that stuff. And then, you know, how much do you have left over? So yours is greatly shifted from the sounds of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just,
so if you could, for people listening and watching, what percentage would you say that you used to think of, you know, what headspace percentage would you give? How much you thought about food in your body before?
Oh, like 85% of the time. It's like all I thought about. Like it's just like my whole life was revolved around it. I used to say it was a career. Like I was a career dieter. Like that's all I thought about.
You know? What about now? What percent?
Oh, like nothing. Like I don't even know. Like 5% maybe. Like I don't know.
I just... So it's totally
and it's more boom. Like, oh, I gotta, you know, I'm gonna get a pedicure or like,
right.
Like oh, I'm gonna pluck those hairs out of my face. Like that kind of
yes.
thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah, I just don't really, and I mean, I have to acknowledge that I really do come from a place of privilege. Like I live in a straight size body. So I think it's definitely easier for me to say something like that, you know, like I can go out into the world. I don't have people telling me that there's, you know, people aren't telling me to lose weight when I go to the doctor. People aren't like, I can fit into the airline seats. I can find clothes at most stores. Like and so that makes it a lot easier for me. So I don't want people to compare because I do think that depending on someone's lived experience, like it's going to be different for them, you know?
Yes. So good. I always say don't compare it.
Yeah.
It's a journey doing that. Yes.
Yeah. And I guess some future aspirations would be just continuing to do the work I do. I'm doing a training program now to train other coaches. So, or professionals, I should say, not just coaches, but people like, you know, educators or therapists or dietitians, just in terms of how they can start to bring in some body image support into their work so that they're helping clients in a good way. And for myself, I think just, I'm continuing to kind of work through some of my own like rooted core beliefs that led initially to the body hate, but now lead to other areas of my life. Cause I think that's sometimes what happens, like it shape shifts. And so, I think, and I mean that you mentioned the aging thing. I do. It's on my radar for sure. Like I definitely, it's funny cause body shame was always a coping mechanism for me. Like anytime I was feeling like my life felt out of control or I was really stressed, I would start to fixate on my body.
Yeah.
And now I do
a way to feel in control, right?
Now I do that with aging. I notice I will start fixating on like wrinkles, and it's always when like other stuff is going on in my life. And
And it's a metaphor. It's not about, I call my book, it's not about the food, but it's not about the body. It's not about the wrinkles.
Yeah. So it's it's been interesting to observe that. And then I can step outside of it and be like, Botox is not going to fix this.
Oh no.
You're like, you're just experiencing overwhelm, like, or whatever else is kind of going on.
I find a good question to ask when you find yourself fixating on something like that is just doing a little mindful check-in, like what's going on for me right now. So checking in, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? And what are the sensations in my body?
Yes, and then I love that.
Bringing some self-compassion and just asking yourself, what do I need right now?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And then give that to yourself, you know, like it could be compassion. It could be empathy. It could be a nap.
Yes, I know. I was going to say rest.
Yes, but you have a toddler, right?
Yeah. He'll be 4 in September. So.
Oh, yeah. I see. He's got a lot going on. Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to ask you, what is your bigger picture vision of what is possible for all of us regarding body image? And what should we as a culture be working on to make this happen? Do you have hope that things will change?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, my hope is just that we can really start to try to change for the next generation. You know, and I think we're up against a lot, unfortunately, but my hope is that, you know, we start to have generations that are more aware and like, you know, demanding things like more inclusivity, more diversity, like, you know, seeing sort of the death of like Abercrombie and Finch, you're like, okay, that's good. Like maybe our culture is changing a bit. And so, you know, see, like things like that. And I think overall, like just being able to see more systemic change in terms of ending body-based discrimination. So more advocacy for like getting information out to healthcare so that we can end, you know, or reduce at least anti-fat bias within healthcare, I think is a major thing. And
huge.
And just making sure, you know, trying to find things that are more accessible. And I know that that's not like, there's a lot of organizations, there's a lot of people doing that work already. So for people to sort of seek out those people, those organizations, to be able to support them, whether that's just like, you know, put donation wise financially, or just even just, you know, like signal boosting their platforms and things like that. Because I think that, and speaking up when we can, you know, when we hear stuff that's fat phobic, like speaking up, because I think that's really important in the same way that we would, you know, if we hear something that's racist, like we want to be using our voice to try to ignite change. And so I think that that's, and doing our own unlearning process in order to feel really comfortable being able to do things like that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it really has to start on the individual level with everything. We have to do our own personal work in order to be able to, you know, reach the broader society and have that message go out there effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many good resources now that are good places for people to start. So
can you name two of those, Summer?
Oh yeah. So I think, Sonia Renee Taylor's The Body Is Not an Apology is an amazing place to start. I think that I'm trying to think of like Virgie Tovar is another amazing activist, has really great books like You Have the Right to Remain Fat. And I'm trying to think of like other activist books that are, I should look at my bookshelf, but you know, I really encourage people to kind of like read from authors that have more lived experience. So, you know, there's a book by like Jess Baker called Things No One Tells Fat Girls. There's a book by Joy Cox called Fat Girls and Black Bodies. Like all of those resources are really, really, there's a book by Deshaun Harris that I'm blanking on the cover, but I think it's like policing. It might be like policing the black body or something like that. It's on my bookshelf. I just can't see it. But anyways, those are all like, I think that, you know, the more that we can read from like people who have lived experience, and really that helps more. And so those are some of the books that I suggest to people.
That's why I love people's stories, because we really learn through stories. It's always helpful. Wonderful. And the last question I have is, I think people would appreciate hearing some stories and feedback that you've heard, because you work with so many people across the world, from coaching clients in terms of, or people in your groups, in terms of their own personal healing with regards to how they view their bodies, which may provide hope and inspiration to others.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many. I've been doing this work for 8 years, and so I've done a lot of interviews with PATH clients for my podcast and stuff. And I think, like, the, you know, one person I'll speak to a couple, and I'll share them because their story's on my podcast. So it's already out in public. So, but you know, I remember working with this one client who, like, just hated her body for decades, like, just would not go to the beach, would not do anything because of the body shame that they felt. Mm-hmm. And through doing our work together, that's the person who became a foster care parent. So they were in their 50s, and she had wanted kids and didn't happen. And so she was able to then go and become a foster parent, and she, like, posts pictures of herself online, and she does these events with her dog, like, does these, like, flyball events. And, like, I remember she messaged me, like, I think it was probably a year ago or something, where she's like, "Summer, I was, like, rolling down a grass hill."
Oh, that's the best.
You know, so it's just amazing to sort of hear, sort of go, someone who, you know, wouldn't leave their house for certain things, to really, like, living fully and
embodied in her body.
Like, yeah, really, yeah.
Enjoying
yeah.
the body for what it yeah. could do.
Yeah. And I think
sometimes, pleasure.
Yes. And I think sometimes people think, like, well, you know, it's too late, or I've just been like this too long in my life. And I just think it's another example of how that's not true. And so, but yeah, I think overall, like, the feedback I hear is just people feeling just more peace of mind, more free, and just having that mental space back. And I just want to caveat that none of this stuff is linear. It's not like, it doesn't just flip on and you're good. Everyone has setbacks. Everyone has bad days. But I think it's about, you know, learning tools to be able to navigate through those things and becoming resilient in those moments so that you can handle those moments better. I could give, like, a lot more specific stories, but I always sort of highlight that one story, because I think she's just kind of made this incredible difference in the world. And another girl, like, just like I said, is, like, did work in her healthcare where she worked, to really bring the health at every size message there, which was also really cool to see.
Right. Mm-hmm. And people can listen to those stories in your podcast.
Yes. I do them every 6 months. So I sort of do catch ups with people just for them to share their story, because I just think it's, you know, like I said, it's really important to listen to people with different lived experiences.
Yeah.
And I never want to kind of say, if I can do it, so can you, because we all have different backgrounds. So I think that it's easier to sort of hear it from people who maybe have a similar experience than you or a similar background as you.
Yeah. Right. And just before we wind up, this has just been wonderful. I wonder, was there anything that you wanted to add that I didn't ask you, or that you thought of later?
I don't think so. I think that's good. Yeah. Covered a lot. I'm sure I'll think of something later, but no.
Oh, it's so wonderful, Summer. I know people are really going to enjoy this, and kudos to you for the work that you do. It's just fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. My pleasure. You take good care.